Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping in for, well, it's definitely one of those conceptually challenging journeys we've taken, but also, I think, fundamentally essential.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're really wrestling with the question of truth itself.
Yeah, specifically truth in an age where, frankly, technology seems to have made reality optional.
That's a good way to put it. And our guides for this are two absolute titans of postmodern thought. Jean Baudrillard's Simulacra and Simulation.
Which is revolutionary, really.
Oh, completely. And Jean-François Lyotard's foundational text, The Postmodern Condition.
Now, these are, look, they're not easy reads, let's be honest.
No, definitely not. You pick them up, you feel that theoretical density, and maybe you put them down again. I get it.
Right. But the ideas in there about the hyper-real, about these things called meta-narratives, about what happens when the copy sort of overtakes the original, they are just crucial. They're like the intellectual keys, really, to understanding our current moment.
Right.
You know, misinformation, deep fakes, political theater, it all connects back.
It really does.
So our mission for you today, it's simple, but yeah, ambitious. We want to distill the core concepts, the simulacrum, the crisis of grand narratives.
We want to try and make it clear why, starting around the late 20th century, this whole idea of the real started to, well, dissolve.
And how that's left us where we are now, maybe with systems that are just designed for performance, not necessarily substance.
Exactly. And we absolutely have to start with Baudrillard's big opening idea, the procession of simulacra.
Right. The famous Borgia story.
Yes. He kicks off with Borgia's allegory about the cartographers. These map makers, they create this incredibly detailed map of the empire. So detailed.
And it covers the territory, exactly. It becomes the territory, in a sense.
Precisely. Yeah. Coterminous with it. But then the empire declines, and the map itself starts to decay, leaving these sort of shreds of abstraction, ruins in the desert.
It's such a powerful image, isn't it? Very melancholic, and captures that idea of representation failing, you know? Trying so hard to capture reality that reality gets smothered by the picture.
It defines that relationship. Map, territory, representation.
And then Baudrillard just pulls the rug out.
Immediately. He says that fable, it's unusable for us now.
Unusable. Why?
Because, he argues, we're way past that stage. The age of representation, imitation, maps, and territories, that's over. We are now deep in the age of simulation.
Okay, that's a huge shift. If the map and territory defined representation, what defines this age of simulation?
It's not about resemblance anymore. It's about operating through models.
Mm-hmm.
Baudrillard talks about things like genetic miniaturization, matrices, memory banks.
So the real isn't something you copy.
No, it's something you produce from these tiny operational units.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be reproduced endlessly, you know, without ever needing an original in the old sense.
Wow. So that gap, the difference between the map and the land it represents, the thing that gave abstraction its charm, as he puts it, that's just gone.
Vanished. We're not dealing with a reflection of reality. We're dealing with a manufactured reality.
Yeah.
One that just floats free with no anchor to anything external.
And that manufactured reality, that's the hyperreal.
That's the term, yes. The hyperreal. It's no longer really the real, he says, because there's no imaginary wrapped around it anymore. It's generated, synthesized from these combinatory models in a kind of hyperspace without atmosphere. Remember. It's purely operational.
Operational, meaning it just works, it functions.
Exactly. The whole era of simulation kicks off by liquidating all the referentials. It throws out the real thing and replaces it with just the signs of the real.
Okay, and this leads directly to that incredibly jarring quote, the one that just stops you in your tracks when you first read it.
Oh, yeah. The simulacrum is never what hides the truth. It is truth that hides the fact that there is none. The simulacrum is true.
It just completely flips everything upside down, our whole search for truth.
It fixes it. His point is that our constant digging for the real truth underneath everything, it's maybe just a way to deny that the foundation itself has evaporated. The simulacrum is true, not because it matches reality, but because its appearance is all that's left. There's nothing else for it to be true to.
Okay, let's dig into that. The blurring of true and false. We need to really get the difference between simulation and just pretending, because that's key, right?
Absolutely essential. Most people mix them up. Dissimulation or pretending is simple enough. You hide something that's actually there.
Like faking a headache.
Right. If I pretend I have a headache, I know the truth is I don't. I'm just masking my real state of health. So dissimulation leaves the basic principle of reality intact. It acknowledges there's a reality to hide.
But simulation, that's different. He says it threatens the difference between the true and the false, the real and the imaginary. How?
Because it's not about hiding symptoms. It's about producing them. Think about his medical example. If someone simulates an illness, they actually generate some of the real physical symptoms. Now, medicine traditionally relies on finding objective causes for real illnesses. But if the simulator produces symptoms that look identical to the real thing, well, medicine is stuck. It can't definitively separate the simulation from the reality based on the symptoms alone. The undiscoverable truth of the illness vanishes.
So if you can produce any symptom, then any illness could potentially be simulated. And the whole certainty of medicine based on objective causes starts to crumble.
Exactly. The line between the true cause and the manufactured effect just dissolves.
And the practical consequences are huge. He talks about the military.
Yeah, the military logic. Historically, the army wants to find the malingerer, the faker, and punish them. But what if they face a really, really good simulator?
Someone who produces all the signs of, say, madness or a heart condition perfectly.
Right. The army might just end up discharging them as exactly equivalent to someone genuinely ill or mad.
Mm-hmm.
The simulator becomes functionally the same as the real thing.
And the inability to tell the difference.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
It's the worst kind of subversion, Baudrillard says, against classical reason. Because reason needs clear distinctions. True, false, sane, mad, real, imaginary. Simulation just bypasses all of that. It makes the difference irrelevant. It doesn't just offer a fake copy. It makes the whole idea of a stable reality seem like a simulation itself.
So back to this idea of the hyperreal being purely operational. We're setting that against something being rational.
Yes. If something's rational, it needs to connect back to some fundamental truth, some verifiable cause and effect. A reason.
But the operational system
doesn't need that external justification. It doesn't need a rational framework. It's generated from codes, matrices, models.
Mm-hmm.
And it works simply because it's programmed to work that way. It's effective because it's efficient, not because it's true. It's sheltered from the imaginary, as he puts it. Sheltered from any clear line between real and imaginary.
Is it like a closed loop, self-perpetuating? And the critical thing, then, is that the real never gets a chance to emerge on its own anymore. The model, the simulation, takes over that generative function.
It preempts the real.
And if the real is truly gone, Baudrillard says we get nostalgic for it, which explains this almost frantic energy in contemporary culture, this panic-stricken production of the real and of the referential.
Exactly. We see this constant escalation of demanding the true, the authentic, the lived experience, a desperate attempt to resurrect the figurative, even when the actual substance has vanished.
And this panic, this is what he means by hyperreality as a kind of cultural deterrence. We try to protect the last bits of real.
Yes, we create these protective bubbles around what's left, trying to guarantee they'll survive.
Yeah.
But the very act of protecting them is what turns them into simulations.
Like the Tassadei tribe example, it's really quite tragic.
It is. Ethnology as a field kind of needed the primitive to exist to justify itself.
So the ethnologists, they cordon off the Tassadei, keep them pure.
Right. They surround them with virgin forests, supposedly to save them from contamination, preserve them by freezing them in time in their original state. But the moment they do that,
they become exhibits.
They become referential simulacra instantly. They stop being, you know, living people in their own context and become the sign of the savage.
Protected to death, as he says. Ethnology basically sacrifices its living subject to save its own reason for existing. It reinvents the savage to keep itself going.
And that's why he says we're all simulacral Indians now.
Yeah.
Our whole world cataloged, analyzed, preserved. It's all artificially resurrected under the banner of the real, driven by this kind of collective hallucination of truth.
You see the same thing with historical sites, right? Like the Lascaux caves.
Perfect example.
Yeah.
The original cave paintings were being damaged by, well, us. By people breathing on them, the moisture.
So they closed the original cave.
They did. And what did they do instead?
Built a perfect copy right next door. Lascaux II. Looks exactly the same. Feels the same.
And that act of duplication, that perfect replica, immediately makes both of them artificial. The original locked away becomes just this inaccessible reference point for the copy.
And the copy, because it's perfect and accessible, becomes the memory. Future generations remember the replica, not the real thing they can never see.
It's pure deterrence. You deter decay by replacing the decaying original with its perfect immortal sign. The simulation replaces the real to preserve it.
This preservation mania even extends to how we handle death in history. Baudrillard's take on the mummy of Ramses II is, well, bizarre, but it makes sense in this context.
It really does. This mummy was apparently just left kind of decaying in a museum for ages. Then suddenly, late 20th century, there's this huge panic. We have to save Ramses, fly him to France, give him military honors.
Why? Why the sudden urgency? It's not like Ramses himself means anything personal to us now.
No, it's because the mummy, as this visible piece of the past, it guarantees that accumulation has meaning. Our whole culture is built on this idea of linear progress, accumulating history. Mm-hmm. We need these stockpiles of the visible past to reassure ourselves that our story makes sense, that it's continuous.
But the act of saving him is actually incredibly violent, isn't it?
It destroys the original meaning. Embalming, in its original symbolic context, was about mastering decay, a slow ritual transformation. Dragging Ramses out, subjecting him to modern science, museums, historical analysis, it condemns that older symbolic order to death and replaces it with a hyper-real museum piece.
We kill the symbolic depth just to celebrate the sign of the past, museumification as the ultimate simulation.
Absolutely. So if Baudrillard is showing us the death of the real object, the referent, we need to bring in Lyotard here because he gives us this incredibly powerful parallel analysis, the death of the foundation, the grand narratives.
That's a great transition. Moving from dead objects like the mummy to dead stories like the idea of inevitable progress, it feels like the same kind of collapse, just on a different level.
It really is. Both thinkers are seeing the foundations crumble, the things we used to use to legitimize knowledge, society, everything.
So Lyotard, in the postmodern condition, he starts by saying knowledge itself is changing. Its status is different now, especially since the late 50s in Europe, as we moved into this post-industrial, postmodern age.
And the defining feature for him, the crisis of the narratives, or meta-narratives.
These are the big overarching stories, the ones that gave everything meaning and purpose.
Exactly. Stories like the emancipation of humanity through reason and science, or the eventual realization of a universal spirit, or the Marxist narrative of achieving a classless society. These grand narratives were what gave science and politics their ultimate justification, their moral compass.
But what happens when people stop believing in those big stories? Where does science get its legitimacy then, if it's not about saving humanity anymore?
Well, that's the crisis. Lyotard argues it shifts towards immanence, meaning the rules for validating knowledge become entirely internal, self-referential.
So science just justifies itself based on its own rules, its own language, its own consensus.
Pretty much. It gets divorced from any larger external moral goal or grand narrative. It becomes about what works within the system of science itself.
And this loss of external foundations connects directly to that shift towards just performance and efficiency, which Lyotard was really focused on, and which sounds a lot like Baudrillard's operational hyperreal.
Absolutely. Lyotard saw how the idea of society as this unified whole, you know, like in Parson sociology, was morphing into something much harder, much more technocratic. The goal became optimizing rationality purely for system performance.
Especially in the context of global competition, the economic war he talks about from the 60s onwards.
Right. It's all about output efficiency.
And the moment optimization and performance become the main goals, you've shifted away from seeking truth in the old sense, haven't you? You're just seeking maximum efficiency.
Which is precisely the kind of operational reality Baudrillard describes. It's the efficient reality that Lyotard is critiquing.
Okay, let's get deeper into that connection. Performance, control. Lyotard saw limits to this drive for total efficiency, didn't he?
He did. He uses the idea of Laplace's demon, this imaginary being that could predict the entire future of the universe if it just knew the position and momentum of every particle right now.
That's like the ultimate dream of system control, right?
Right.
Total knowledge equals total prediction equals maximum performance.
It's the ideal. But Lyotard points out, much like Baudrillard, that the attempt to achieve that kind of total knowledge is actually self-defeating. He uses a version of the Borges map story again.
How so?
He says, think about the energy it would take just to measure the initial state of the system perfectly, to map every single variable. It might require an amount of energy equal to what the system itself uses over its entire existence.
So the mapping consumes the territory. The effort to gain perfect control becomes totally dysfunctional.
Exactly. The bureaucracy needed for that level of control, the endless measuring and monitoring, it can just swamp the system it's trying to optimize. You get negative feedback loops, inefficiency, maybe even collapse.
So, realizing that total control is a fantasy, Lyotard rejects that idea of society as some unified, predictable machine. What does he propose instead?
He says the social bond, the connections between people, are complex, always shifting, and fundamentally agonistic.
Agonistic, meaning competitive, conflictual.
Yes, exactly. Society isn't this harmonious whole aiming for equilibrium. Instead, think of individuals as constantly moving nodes in communication networks. We're always exchanging different kinds of messages.
What kinds of messages?
Well, denotative ones, statements about facts.
Mm-hmm.
Prescriptive ones, rules, commands, orders. And performative ones, statements that actually do something, like making a promise or declaring something open.
So it's like an information battlefield.
In a way, the system sends out prescriptive messages, maximize performance, be efficient. But the individuals, the nodes, they aren't just passive receivers. They can question those prescriptions, send back different kinds of messages. The social link is this constant, unstable negotiation, a battle of messages where certainty is always temporary.
And this focus on instability, it shows up in postmodern science, too.
Definitely. Science in this era, Lyotard argues, isn't just looking for smooth, predictable laws anymore. It's actually seeking out the limits, the points of instability, the unpredictable.
Things like quantum mechanics, chaos theory.
Precisely. Or Mandelbrot's fractals. Think of a coastline. It's continuous, but it's jagged, irregular.
Yeah.
You can't describe its slope at any given point easily.
Yeah.
It has a fractional dimension, mathematically, somewhere between a simple line and a flat surface. It suggests irregularity is fundamental, not just noise.
Or that catastrophe theory example with the dog.
Right, Renee Tom's idea. You have continuous changes in the dog's internal state, rage and fear increasing steadily. But then suddenly you hit a threshold and boom, a discontinuous jump. The dog flips instantly from attack mode to flight mode. The system has these inherent points of sudden, unpredictable change.
Okay, so if the system wants stability, maximum performance, predictability, like Laplace's demon, then the goal of knowledge for Lyotard should be the opposite.
That's his ethical point, really. He proposes the goal for postmodern knowledge should be the search for paralogy.
Paralogy.
It means going against the grain, resisting consensus, actively seeking out the new rules of the game, the unexpected move, the differentiating statement. It's about finding the instabilities, the paradoxes, the things that don't quite fit the established rules.
So it's a form of intellectual resistance against the system's demand for just smooth performance.
Exactly. By looking for paralogy, for dissent, for the unforeseen move, knowledge actually moves forward and it pushes back against that totalizing drive for control and efficiency.
Which brings us right back to the political implications of all this. We have Lyotard's system demanding performance, Baudrillard's hyperreal that only exists to function. And the consequence seems to be the death of political reality as we knew it.
Absolutely. When your referentials collapse, when truth is secondary to the circulation of signs and optimizing performance, political struggles just get sucked into the simulation.
Creating that vertigo of interpretation you mentioned earlier, like the Italian bombing example.
Right. It was the leftists. Right-wing provocateurs.
Mm-hmm.
A centrist false flag. Baudrillard's chilling insight is, all of this is simultaneously true. Not factually true, obviously, but true within the logic of simulation.
How can they all be true?
Because the models come first now. The event itself is almost secondary. It's generated by all the possible interpretations circulating at once. Their truth isn't about matching facts. It's just about their ability to be exchanged within this cycle of interpretations.
Yeah.
They all function as possible explanations.
But if all interpretations are equally valid in the simulation, how can you have political action? How can you have justice or accountability if you can never pin down the real story?
That's the problem. It doesn't really function in the old way. The political system kind of runs on this indecision now. The complexity, the inability to fix meaning becomes the operating principle. If a politician says something like, you know, the opposition won't really change capitalism, that statement carries all possible interpretations simultaneously. Maybe they're weak, maybe they don't want power, maybe power itself doesn't exist anymore. All those meanings circulate.
So power itself, sensing it's dissolving into signs, tries to fight back by constantly trying to re-inject the real staging crises.
That's the panic-stricken production again, but in the political sphere. The system needs us to believe. Believe in the reality of society, the seriousness of the economy, the importance of production. Believe the stakes are real, even if they're simulated. Baudrillard's really radical claim is that actual effective power has vanished. All that's left are the signs of power, like a mannequin.
The mannequin of power. That's stark. He applies this specifically to presidents, right?
Yeah. He makes this distinction. Someone like Kennedy, he argues, was assassinated. because he still embodied something real, a political force, a hope, a threat. His death was a genuine, tragic political event.
But later presidents?
They only get phantom attempts, simulated murders.
Why simulate an assassination attempt?
Because these later figures, in his view, are just mannequins. They don't represent a real political force anymore. They're just functioning signs within the simulation of power. They have to feign being in danger, stage these threats to preserve the illusion, the blessing of power, to convince us all that power is still real, still meaningful, still worth attacking.
So power isn't a structure anymore, not a relationship of force. It's just out there, circulating like money or language.
Exactly. It's just an object of social demand, a commodity that depends on mass consumption of its signs. The whole fiction of a political world is kept alive by constantly staging its own importance, its own gravity.
And technology, especially mass media, is the engine driving all this, the ultimate hyperreal machine. Let's talk about the China Syndrome example.
Right, the movie about a potential nuclear meltdown that came out just before the real Three Mile Island incident at Harrisburg. It was uncanny.
And Baudrillard saw a deep connection there.
He argued the film showed the supremacy of the televised event over the nuclear event. He saw both TV and nuclear power plants as cold systems of deterrence. TV, for him, performs this kind of television of the real. It cools down events, neutralizes their meaning by turning them into instant, consumable images.
So the drama in the movie The Murder Plot, it kind of stands in for the real potential catastrophe. The simulation becomes the main event.
Yes. Simulation holds the power, not the underlying threat. And the core function of constantly simulating catastrophe, whether it's nuclear meltdown, pandemics, economic collapse, is to get us used to the ideology and the discipline of absolute security.
How does simulating disaster create security? That seems counterintuitive.
By constantly showing us the worst-case scenario, the system performs a kind of mental destructuration. It makes us accept extreme control measures, constant surveillance, preemptive actions, all in the name of preventing the simulated catastrophe from becoming real. It deters us from any actual event that might genuinely shake things up.
Which leads to his big media theory statement. Information devours its own content.
Right. The sheer speed and volume of information just leads to entropy, meaning collapses. There's no clear separation anymore between the media and the reality it's supposedly reporting on.
The medium implodes into the real.
Creating this hyper-real nebula, as he calls it, a fog where meaning is just indecipherable. Which is why trying to start a revolution just by changing the content of the media or even its form is probably futile. The medium itself has already neutralized meaning. It's a system of deterrence.
Like reality TV, TV verite, it seems to get closer to reality, but...
But it subjects that reality to this manipulative gaze, this phony exactitude and excessive transparency. That's actually another form of control. It's not the old panopticon anymore where one guard watched many prisoners. Now it's just total transparency, instant circulation. The goal isn't punishment after the fact. It's preventing any deviation from the smooth operation of the system.
Okay. So we've traced this path from a real world with foundations through simulation to this hyper-real state, which is purely operational, purely functional. The whole idea of a single objective truth seems, well, completely undermined by technology, by social systems geared for circulation and control.
Yeah, it's a profound challenge. And we've seen this amazing convergence, haven't we? Lyotard, showing how the performance-driven system throws out those foundational grand narratives.
Yeah, and Baudrillard showing how the hyperreal doesn't need truth or rationality. It just needs to function, to be efficient, to keep the signs flowing. It's the same endpoint, described from slightly different angles.
So in this world where meaning is imploding, where control works through simulation, what's left? Is resistance even possible? Baudrillard's take on nihilism is interesting here. He sees it as passive now.
Not the dramatic, active nihilism of the past.
No, it's the procession of the neutral, he says. Indifference, a kind of melancholy fascination with watching the real, the social, just disappear into the simulation.
If the stage for critique for dialectic is empty, there's no therapy of meaning left, as he puts it.
But he does leave us with this final, maybe hopeful paradox. It loops right back to that first shocking statement about the simulacrum being true.
What's the paradox?
He says, okay, meaning is mortal. It rises, it falls, it changes, it dies. But the thing meaning always try to conquer, to get rid of appearances, those are immortal. Appearances are invulnerable to the nihilism of meaning or of non-meaning itself.
Wow. So if truth, meaning the real itself, have all collapsed into their simulated copies, if the foundations are gone, then the only thing left that lasts forever is just the surface, the appearance, the image, the sign.
That seems to be his final provocative suggestion.
So what does that mean for you listening now, in your life? If appearances completely detached from any grounding truth are the only immortal thing left in this hyper-real fog, does fighting for objective truth become pointless?
Yep.
A losing battle against the simulation?
Or does Léotard's idea of paralogy, of creating new unstable rules within the game challenging the consensus, does that become the only meaningful ethical path left? Finding the glitches, the unexpected moves within the system of appearances. That's the paradox of the simulacrum. That's the thought we'll leave you with.